This is an interview with Arthur Schumann and Carl Hamill. Earl Hamill, sorry. On May 10th, 1984, you are both here for your 50th reunion as members of the class of 1934. And we're talking in the Red Gym. And my name is Laura Smale. I'm just going to try this one. Oh, this is much livelier. I think it is the battery. We'll just listen to that. You will, Mr. Schumann, then you're going
to... Okay. Sorry. I graduated from high school in February 1930 and immediately enrolled at the University of Wisconsin. It was very simple how I decided to attend the University of Wisconsin. It was because I lived in town and it was much cheaper, and it was probably because of that I was able to go to the university. But there was no doubt about my going because my parents, especially my mother, was a great believer in education, and she was very insistent that I go. And I had had an older brother who had graduated from the university too. And so I had his example to follow and try to emulate. So I enrolled in the university immediately on my graduation from high school in mid-year 1930.
What did your father do?
He had been a blacksmith and a garage owner in a little town of Verona near Madison for many, many years. But in his later years, when I was going to school, he was a custodian at the university here.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And,
so had he gone to the university?
No. His education ended about sixth grade, and I think about that time, his father took him into the blacksmith shop. He was, and he was in that for a number of years, and then graduated to the garage business and was the first Ford dealer in Verona for a number of years, and then eventually got out of that business and moved to Madison, where he got involved with the university.
But they were intent on your getting an education.
Absolutely, yeah. And particularly my mother was very intent upon my getting a college education. And I had had a brother who was older than I was, who had graduated and had done pretty well. So he was the prime example that was pointed out to me of the virtues of education.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's some of the background.
What did you know what you wanted to be what you wanted to specialize in when you came here?
Yes, I had decided to specialize in accounting, go to the School of Commerce, and of course, here again, I was sort of following in my brother's footsteps because he had graduated from the School of Commerce and had been doing what was regarded as pretty well in those days. And so he was a bright and shining example of what I was supposed to be doing.
And one last question: was it a financial hardship for your parents to send you?
Well, yes, we didn't really have any spare money. 1930 was at the depths of the Depression, and money was a pretty scarce commodity. And it was really only because we lived in Madison, I could walk to the university from where we lived, that made it really possible for me to go to school.
So you could manage the tuition.
Yes, which was about $22 a semester, yeah. Or some such thing.
All right. Well, now we'll turn to you, Mr. Hamill.
Well, I graduated.
You were born in Madison.
Actually in Verona.
In Verona, yes. And now, please, when were you born?
I was I was born in northern Wisconsin, a little place called Medford, mm-hmm. on January 10th, 1911. Graduated from the Phillips High School, which was about 40 miles away from Medford, with my family having moved to Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
I had a desire to go to the university. I had friends who were ahead of me a couple of years, and they encouraged me to come to the university, and I went down with them, and this was in September of 1929, and we roomed at a private home here in Madison, because folks didn't have the means to stay in other places. We roomed at the same place that we had our meals at the same place we roomed.
All right.
Is this, yes, when I talk right into the mic, and I guess I'll pass the mic to sure. each of us, which is difficult, but that seems to move the needle very well. So I would like to ask you, Mr. Hamill, what your father did and your parents' background was and why it was that you wanted to come to the university.
My father was a salesman for Swift and Company. Folks were Canadians and had gone through high school in Canada, and then came over to Wisconsin to work. And they had the desire for me to go on to school too, because they didn't have that opportunity, having been brought up on a farm in Canada.
Mm-hmm. And what did you want to get from college, and what did you expect to do afterwards?
I liked high school bookkeeping, and decided I wanted to go into commerce, accounting, major in accounting. I knew that the day I arrived in Madison. And where I was going to end up in the business world those days, you weren't too sure. The Depression started soon after that, and we were lucky to get jobs, I guess.
Now, you started to talk about your housing. Let's go into that next, and why don't you continue?
Okay.
You said, how did you find your room, and what was it like?
I mentioned before that I was with some students who were in their second and third year at the university, that I roomed with them. I came down to school with them. We came on a bus from northern Wisconsin, and we roomed at this rooming house. I think there were six of us fellas roomed at this house where we had our meals. And we stayed there for a period of 2 years.
Mm-hmm. What, the landlady cooked the meals?
The landlady cooked the meals. It was husband and wife, retired people, had this rooming house and cooked the meals. And
were the meals good? Did you?
Yes, it was good. Good fam. Good home cooked food.
I'm just remembering somebody I interviewed who said he had to learn to like some vegetables. I think that was it.
No problem with the meals.
And you lived there for 2 years. All right. Why don't you, Mr. Showman, where did you? Oh, you lived at home.
Well, I lived at home, yes. Mm-hmm. So.
All the way through college?
Yes. Yeah, all the way through.
Where was your house?
It was over on Vilas Avenue, just a couple of blocks away from Vilas Park.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a single family home that we lived in.
Did you feel that this was a handicap? Did it keep you from making friends and getting involved in the university?
Well, I guess to some extent, because being in town, whenever I was not in class, I usually went home, so I didn't really have quite the opportunity to get involved or didn't take the opportunity at least to get involved in social affairs or, you know, other affairs relating to the university.
Do you, why don't you, the two of you, continue on now and just relax. Here are some things you could talk about and just remind each other of things, maybe starting perhaps with the classes and professors and...
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
I guess you'll have to pass the mic back and forth when one of you is...
Okay, well, I'll start out here and then I'll pass the torch to you, Earl.
Okay.
Well, the classes were 50 minutes long, as I recall, and of course the other 10 minutes you were scrambling around trying to get to the next class. And generally speaking, it was 1 hour per credit per week. I think the normal complement was about 16 credits per semester, which meant 16 hours of classwork or lab work or whatever was involved. And my recollection of the labs and discussion, well, the labs, my recollection is that they were generally taught by professors. And the discussion sections, they might be taught by instructors or graduate students. The classes, generally, as I recall them, were fairly formal. They were coeducational, but the usual form of address for the teacher was to address you as Mr. So-and-so, and you in turn addressed him as Mr. So-and-so, which was a great culture shock at the time of entering the university, because we'd been used to being called by our first names in high school, so that was a sign of growing up or something. We thought to be called Mr. And so far as cutting classes is concerned, I don't think there was too much of that. I did some of it myself, but not very much, because overall I was really interested in getting an education, so I didn't really cut them too much, and I don't recall that there was any particular penalties for cutting classes. I guess the penalty was mostly in terms of maybe having missed something that would crop up in an exam later on, and that's where you'd pay the penalty. I don't know, do you have anything to add, Earl?
No, I think Art's covered that section pretty well. I agree. I was interested in studying and my grades, and not here just for a good time, because it was depression years, and you were just lucky to be in school.
You felt that way, did you?
That's right. And
not everybody thinks of saying that. Do you think it was because you were both from of relatively poor families that you felt that way?
I think so.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. I knew kids in school that came from wealthy families, and they were just down here for a lark, and they were the ones who were cutting the classes, not the two of us.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, life is pretty real and pretty earnest, we were here with a purpose in mind. So.
We're talking about classes here. We were both here in major in accounting. I think we had all of our accounting classes together.
Yeah.
And of course, Dean Elwell was one of the outstanding professors at the university. And
Do talk about him. I've never heard about him from the point of view of a student, but I've heard about him from other faculty members. I'd love to hear what you have to say about him.
Well, he was pretty strict, and he was all business. There was no fooling around in Dean Elwell's classes, and if he caught you talking, it was sometimes he'd kick you out of the class for that day.
Yeah.
And a great, I might add
that he was very much a believer in formality, and one of the things that he impressed on us was that if you were going to go out there and look for a job, you had to look like something. You had to wear garters, and you had to wear a hat and a tie, and dress the part of somebody slovenliness was a real curse so far as he was concerned. And,
right, I agree.
What did he look like?
Well, he I would guess that he was about 5'10" or so. He had a little mustache, which was a little bit unusual in those days, and kind of a florid face, a round face,
booming voice.
Booming voice. And as Earl says, he was very strict, but he was really very interesting to listen to, because he really had a wide range of interest, and he followed the careers of all of his students, and he had a great recollection for his former students, and followed them in their various careers, and part of his lectures were enlivened by references to them, and actually I found that very, very interesting that he would do that, and
how successful they had been.
Yeah, right, and all because of his teaching. But one of the things that I remember about him was that about 15 or 20 years later, after I'd graduated from college, and I hadn't seen him in that length of time, he appeared in Los Angeles at an alumni group to speak to them on Founders Day or some such thing, and I came up to him, and he remembered me right away, and called me by my first name, and that was very, very impressive to me that he had such a, you know, he'd known so many people, and yet he could see me after 15 or 20 years and call me by my first name and take up as if we'd just parted the day before. So he had a pretty good way of relating to people, and as I say, an excellent memory.
Can you add to that?
No, I think Art has probably covered it pretty well. I agree that he had of his memory. He always, when you came back to Madison for any event, went up to the School of Commerce, he always remembered you and invited you to come into his office, and when you see him someplace, he always took time to, well, what have you been doing, and where are you living, where are you working, and he was
a very friendly man.
Very friendly. Mm-hmm. Made an impression on you.
Mm-hmm.
We remembered him.
What about some of the other teachers in commerce?
Well, there was Professor Gibson. Let's see, if I remember correctly, it was James Curry Gibson.
Yeah.
And he was a little short fellow, and sort of a Napoleon type. Well, he taught cost accounting, and I must say I never thought very highly of his merits as an instructor. I found it kind of difficult to learn from him. I think he knew the material very well, but he was really the type of person that didn't do a very good job of instruction. there are that type of people. And let's see, then there were a couple of ladies in there as instructors. One was named Irene Henze, and another one was Angeline Linz. And they did some of the work in the discussion sections and in the, well, accounting, bookkeeping type labs that were held in those days. And,
were they good teachers?
Yes, yes. I think they were. I thought they were both good teachers. Uh-huh. Do you have any recollections?
They always said about Gibby, if he ever lost the answer book, he'd be lost. Oh. But I think I agree. All four of our accounting professors or instructors were fine, capable teachers.
Was Walter Morton teaching anything
yes,
in
but
commerce
he,
then?
He was over in money and banking.
Banking, yeah.
So you didn't take a course
yes,
with him?
As part of our, I did.
Yes.
As part of our commerce school, general, while we had majored in accounting, we had money and banking, and we had him from Walter Morton.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed his courses, and I'm sure we got a lot out of them.
Art, you wanna? Yeah, I don't think I had Morton. It seems to me he was teaching insurance, and I don't think I took any of his courses. But I had a Professor Scott, I think, for money and banking, and he was really an older gentleman at that time.
I was mistaken.
Yeah, fairly.
Didn't Morton teach statistics?
No, I think he was in insurance.
Oh.
Statistics, actuarial type things.
Yes.
And yeah, there was a gentleman named Fox that was teaching statistics, but Morton was in insurance, of course, which involved statistics and actuarial type things. And
did you get to know your faculty in commerce socially?
No, I don't think I ever did get to know any of them socially. I don't. My recollection, that sort of thing wasn't done in those days.
In those days, it wasn't being done.
So you never went to their house? Or?
No.
Oh, no, no. If we ever went to their house, we knew we were in real trouble.
What was happening?
We were about to be kicked out or something.
Any other professors?
Well, I'd be interested in what other kinds of, whether you were taking courses in either the sciences or the other social sciences or history, English, what,
well,
if you remember
you
some
were
of those.
You were required, of course, to have English, 2 years of English.
Mm-hmm.
Then I took physics as my science there, and we were talking to somebody, the last person you interviewed here, talking about economics, Bill Kuechelker,
mm-hmm.
and his lectures in Music Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a skyrocket when he began the lecture and when he finished it.
Yeah, that's right.
Every time.
Every time. And so.
His classes, his lectures were very popular on campus because he was always very, very interesting and sometimes controversial. But let's see, didn't he used to wear a big red bow tie and,
yeah.
and upon occasion? And then, of course, every year before the big football game, they painted his wall here on Langdon Street with
the Madison Inn is now.
Yeah, here with beat Northwestern or
yeah.
beat
oh,
Minnesota or whatever the yeah. name of the opponent was, and that used to be an annual institution to have that wall painted. It had to be painted twice, once to paint the letters on and the second time to
paint them out.
So his fence was well kept.
Yeah. I worked in the summer months to supplement what my folks could provide for me, but not during the school year.
What did you do?
I worked in the county treasurer's office in up in northern Wisconsin as a clerk. And to do whatever there was to be done in the office. And do you want me to cut Art?
Well, I was doing clerking in a retail grocery store every Saturday, and getting about 35 cents an hour for my labors, which is a pretty good price for those times. And then on Sundays I had a job for a few hours every Sunday working in a drugstore, and so that between the grocery store and the drugstore, why they furnished a little bit of spending money, and that was about that was about all, because being lucky enough to live in town, well, I had no room and board bill, so I was able to get along on that. And well, let's see, so far as social life is concerned, we of course managed to struggle along to try to do a little bit of dating, and we might take our dates to the movie, and I think we tried to go before 6 o'clock, because that was when the rates changed from 25 cents to 35 cents. And then so far as I was concerned, I dated mostly what they call the town girls here. Those are the ones that I had known. And then we did go to dances. Let's see, they had the Chanticleer that was out near Middleton. And then there was one out around Westport. I've forgotten the name of that. Those were places we went when we really felt to be a little bit in the bucks.
I guess one of the events I remember attending at school was going to the military ball. I had used to attend that every year. I'd played in the university band while in school, and the military ball was, and I played in the ROTC band too in connection with that, and somehow we got interested in going to the military ball held in the Memorial Union. Never did get to the prom, didn't have enough money to afford to go to it. That cover it pretty well. You want to go on? Go ahead.
There's one thing that's a little bit off the subject, I think, but that's in discussing some of the professors and instructors whom you remember. Yes, I remember El Well, I remember Kiekhofer, and in addition to that, I remember an instructor in English literature. I took that as a sort of an elective course, and there was an instructor there. He was an instructor at the time too. His name was Wilder, and he was the first person that really roused an interest in literature for me, because he was a Shakespeare lover. And he could recite passages from Shakespeare and do it in a manner which made it live and breathe. And he was the first person who'd ever been able to, you know, to arouse that sort of an interest in me. But I think that it was experiences like that that were very helpful to me in arousing an intellectual curiosity, which I think has continued at least to some extent throughout all the years. And that's and it was experiences like that that come back to me as one of the main virtues of having attended the university, was to encourage me to keep the lamp of knowledge lit or whatever.
You want to continue in the same theme? Whatever
comes to your mind.
You talk about leisure time. One of the things I remember was a couple of us fellows dated some girls from Barnard Hall, and we would every Sunday between 3 and 4, they rolled up the rugs over at Barnard Hall, and they had Lady Esther Serenade. I think it was Wayne King. Yeah. And so we danced with kind of an informal thing that they just rolled up the rugs, and we had from 3 to 4 was a kind of a Sunday afternoon pastime.
I don't remember if the Memorial Union was there by the time we graduated. I'm trying to remember whether it was built while we were there or maybe just before. Yeah.
We came.
Yeah.
Just brand new.
Yeah. And of course that was sort of an in place to go at that time. Maybe it probably still is, but. And they had the Rathskeller there, and there used to be a group that hung out there religiously when they weren't in class, and there were some pretty hot bridge games took place there, and pool tournaments and that sort of thing.
Did you play bridge or pool?
Well, I played some bridge there, but I didn't get to be an addict of it as much as some of the rest of them. But,
the building we're having this interview in here, we were speaking earlier that before they built the field house, they played their basketball games in this, right out the back of this office here. Mm-hmm. And I remember when the field house was dedicated. I believe that was 1930. The field house was dedicated when they left the Red Gym and out to the field house at Camp Randall. And the band played in the band for that occasion. I think Meanwell was the coach in those days, basketball coach.
Mm-hmm. And as a little further note on sports or activities, I had joined the Delta Sigma Pi fraternity, which is a commerce fraternity, and had their house over on Breeze Terrace there, right next to Camp Randall. And we had something of an in with the athletic department because one of our alumni, Bill Aspinwall, was a ticket director and was for many years. And one of our favorite tricks during the football season was that several of us got jobs as ushers. And so we'd get our usher's pass and get through the gates all right with that, and then somebody would collect all the usher's badges and take them back out and bring in another group. So that we were able to make a maximum use of the facilities there.
You played in the band. Were you playing a band instrument when you came here?
Yes, I played it. I played in the high school band up at Phillips, where
what,
I got
what instrument?
Baritone horn. And then I tried, when I came to the university in the fall of 29, I tried out for the band and played, what's the expression, I made the band, and
yeah.
And we, every Saturday when the football team was home, we had to march down University Avenue to Camp Randall, and it was a great event. The first time I come from a little town up north, it was a real thrill to walk into the Camp Randall Stadium with all the fans standing and cheering for the band.
Mm. Who was the director of the band?
Major Morphy.
Can you say something about him?
Well, he was a pretty strict. He was something like Faye Elwell. He was all business. There was no fooling around in the band, and he had an assistant by the name of Russ Moberly that did a lot of the helped out, and especially Major Morphy was getting a little older, and he would come out to the, he wouldn't march with us down University Avenue, but he would be at the games to direct the band, especially between halves, and he took a part in that.
I heard the story that he was such a perfectionist that once when the band wasn't playing well, I think he refused to let it play at a game. Do you remember anything like that?
Not during my time.
it could be, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Did you have any experience like Mr. Schumann's in terms of a class that inspired you and had a particular effect on you?
We had all of, as I said before, we had all of our accounting courses together.
But I meant the English
yes.
class. Like that?
No, I can't at this time recollect. I suppose when we leave here, something will come to me.
Yes. Were you fond of music other than playing in the band?
Yes.
Did you go to the music room at the Union? Was there a music listening room then?
I don't know. I had a liking for music way back in high school and enjoyed here. I remember one of the elective courses that we took was music appreciation. Everybody.
Oh, that was one of those pipe courses.
Pipe courses. Yeah. That's right.
So you both took it.
No, I don't know that I did.
But you.
I needed it.
I probably wouldn't admit it.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a bridge player.
Oh, I see.
But it was only a one-credit course, and I guess I needed it to fill out 16 credits for so a semester. But as Art said, it was considered a pipe course. So all you had to do was put in appearance, and you were sure of getting a passing grade.
Elaborate a little bit on sports. I can recall some of the football heroes at the time. One was Ernie Lusby. Another one was Mickey McGuire, the half Irish, half Hawaiian halfback who came here from Hawaii and was really an outstanding football player for Wisconsin during his career.
Punted barefooted.
Yeah, that's right. He punted barefooted. And I remember one year when they played Wisconsin at Madison here, Minnesota was a considerable favorite, but they kicked off and McGuire ran it back about 97 yards for a touchdown, and that sort of set the tone for the whole day, because I think Wisconsin scored a couple more touchdowns and then held on to win. But anyhow, that was a pretty exciting event of the time.
What were your physical activities? You know, nowadays we all feel that we have to jog or do something. What did you do then?
Well, I was more interested in baseball than anything else, and so at least during the summer times, I was playing baseball almost all the time, and playing mostly softball at that time because here again, due to the Depression, there wasn't any money for equipment and no merchants to sponsor teams and that sort of thing. So we reverted back to softball, where all you needed was a big 14-inch pudding bag that, and a bat and an empty lot, and you could play in that. You didn't need a lot of equipment, and so that became pretty popular around here at that time. And softball was a pretty popular sport.
Was it organized or just?
Oh yes, yeah. It was organized into leagues. Yeah. Well, we had various leagues that were organized, and here in Madison there were several. Oh, we had a couple of major leagues and a couple of minor leagues, and we played out schedules of maybe 25 or 30 games, and then we had a city tournament at the end of every year, along in August or September, and that was all those games were held out at Breeze Stevens Field. I don't know if that's even in existence anymore, but that was at that time was a pretty new baseball stadium and had lights, and that was another big step forward were the lights, and so that was my major physical activity, and I might play basketball in a church league. So those were the things that I did for sports.
What about you?
I'm trying to recollect what. I don't think I was involved in any. Well, I didn't have to take gym because I was playing in the band, and all fall, every fall, you marched 4 days a week. I guess we had to go from 3:30 to 5:30, and then ROTC season. When they had their parades over here on Lower Campus, right across the street. Mm-hmm. We used to have to march with the ROTC army, or whatever you want to call it. And I can't recollect, but I don't think I got involved directly in any sports at that time.
Did you go for walks out to Picnic Point and things like that?
Yes. Didn't play golf in those days, but golf wasn't too popular. I can't.
What were your politics at that time?
I guess I was brought up in a family. My father was, mother were Republicans. I guess I had Republican leanings, and that was the Depression days when Franklin Roosevelt was president, and the banks closed, and that was quite an event there to have the banks closed. And we were at this rooming house, and she had to, I remember, we couldn't get any money and couldn't write a check on our bank account, and so she carried us for a couple of weeks till some of the banks began to
reopened
there.
So you didn't suffer any particular hardship from it?
No.
Just it was peculiar, I'm sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember, I was taking a course in investments during the that time when the banks closed, and we had a professor by the name of William Taylor, and we came to class, and he had a book that had in investments was written by a president of a bank in Detroit. He says, well, that bank just failed. We can't use that text anymore. So,
yeah, that's right. I'd forgotten about William Bayard Taylor. He was a professor of finance and really pretty sharp and witty type, yeah. and sophisticated, or at least sophisticated for that time, I guess. His classes were always very interesting and well attended.
I hadn't thought about the fact that you're in commerce and business classes during this period of real chaos in commerce and business. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did this come into your classes? Did professors talk about the Depression and their theories about it? Do you remember?
I don't recall particularly any. I don't have any gems that I remember, at least. Another professor that was there was Selig Perlman. He was teaching labor economics, he was really, I think, a pretty forward man for his times. So what we'd call a liberal, almost a red hot, I guess. Anyhow, I had some very interesting theories on labor and economics, and I think he really made something of a mark in terms of labor economics, and I think he was a consultant for some of the labor unions and may have had a hand in some of their successes during this period.
And it comes back to me as we are talking here about professors. I remember a Professor Orner that I took a course in business letter writing.
Oh, yeah.
And I still remember his pet was never start a sentence with a pronoun. I and we. That was his.
In your life difficult for you?
Well.
How else do you start a sentence?
Did you take a course? His course?
Oh yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
that was his pet. Never start a sentence, a paragraph, not a sentence. I misspoke. Never start a paragraph.
Oh.
With I.
I see. That would be
easier. Yeah, that's right. I misspoke before. Don't start your letter out. I did this or something like that. That was a no-no as far as he was concerned in business letter writing.
I remember him. My recollection of him was that he was a fairly good sized fellow, very, very dapper type, always very well dressed and well groomed.
And what were your politics?
I think we were probably Democrats at that time. I think my parents were more in sympathy with Democrats and the Republicans, and they were, of course, by 1932, they were certainly ready for a change, so I'm sure they, along with 99% of the country, voted for Franklin Roosevelt.
Did you all discuss politics very much among each other?
I don't know. I don't think so. My recollections are that no, we didn't really talk about it very much.
There was a peace movement, the Oxford movement, and it was fairly strong around 34. Do you remember anything about that or about concerns about communists on campus, any of that sort of thing?
Well, there were always some discussions and talk about communists and the Red Menace, but they were really pretty much of a minority group, and I don't think there was ever any real worry about them.
You didn't get excited about it.
No, I didn't.
I mean, some people did. I've talked to people.
Yeah, yeah, right.
One of the other items I see on here are student services. As I discussed, the student health center.
Okay.
The old infirmary over here on University Avenue. I had pleurisy when I was in school and spent 6 weeks in the infirmary to clear up this pleurisy, and then that's the reason why I started in the fall of 1929. I didn't finish school until January. I stayed out a whole semester, but I always have a fond memory of the good service that I received from the staff, the medical staff there, and which was all a part of your, you paid a fee, medical fee, I guess I don't know what it was called, and it didn't cost my folks anything for this 6 weeks stay in the infirmary. But they were, I remember they used to bring the students from the School of Medicine over to parade through the infirmary, and you were an example of the problems they should be, the student doctors should be looking for. Talked about State Street in Madison. I guess having lived in the north, on the west side of Madison, it was kind of a treat to get up to State Street. And there was two theaters up there, the Orpheum, and they had vaudeville at the Orpheum. What was across the street? The State Theater, was it?
I think so, yeah.
And so that was a Saturday night treat to get to a vaudeville. And they used to have orchestras that came there and played on stage, and that was a treat of the week to be able to attend a movie on up at one of the theaters there.
Could you afford to often or not often, or
it was something
you could do if you wanted
something
to.
Special that you could. It was a real treat.
But you didn't have to save pennies for a couple of months to do it.
No. So I never get up around just to go up to, if we lived in the Langdon Street area, it would be common to go over to State Street, but it was, if you got over here to the bookstore, and it was your normal student activity was get as far as the old co-op here, and where you bought your books, but I spent more of the time on the School of Commerce was over on the other side of the campus, up on the fourth floor of Sterling Hall, and there was no elevators in those days. You had to walk up all four floors.
Right.
Where did you eat lunch over there, students?
Well, I think I went home for lunch. And I walked a couple of miles each way.
You didn't need any exercise, did you?
Yeah, I got plenty of exercise walking. Because I walked in the morning, walked back at noon, and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I got by.
The first 2 years, I went to the boarding house so you had maybe the classes were over 10 minutes to 12 if you had a class, but it wasn't every day that you had an 11 o'clock class. So, and then classes didn't start till 1:30 in the afternoon, Art, is that?
I don't know.
In the morning they ran 8 to 12, I don't know, but was it?
I think 8 to 12, I remember it all was 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yes. That was kind of tough to make sometimes.
Yeah.
I think the afternoon classes did start at 1:30, until maybe 4:30.
4:30, yeah.
What did you do with your last 2 years?
The last 2 years, there was four of us fellows lived in an apartment building up on University Avenue, which is now right by the Milwaukee Road railroad tracks. The building is now gone, but one of the fellows was a good cook, and somebody else did the buying. And again, these were part of our depression problems. We lived fairly reasonable in an apartment there. The four fellows, and I say we were fortunate to have one fellow that knew a lot about cooking, and he was the chief cook, and the rest of us did the
bottle of
But the rest of us took turns in cleaning up the apartment, washing the dishes, or buying the groceries, and we got by in those depression days only because of being able to help ourselves, and couldn't afford to live in the dorms or fraternity house. Yeah. Or
actually,
have any other recollections as we go along?
I guess this
brings
is
up another.
Yes.
Probably kind of disjointed, but here's publications, a comment on the Daily Cardinal. I guess my recollection of the Daily Cardinal was that I was really regarded as a pretty liberal group, and it always seemed to be in a turmoil, editorial chaos.
<Yeah. laughs> That's interesting. Why?
Well, I think there was a group of people who in that day were regarded as pretty much liberal or red hots, and they were sort of in command of the editorial policies of the Daily Cardinal, and so it always used to be in quite a bit of difficulty either with the school authorities or with the some of the more conservative students. So as I say, my recollection is it always seemed to be developing causes or something, and stirring up problems.
Did you enjoy that, or did you think it wasn't proper for a student newspaper?
Well, I guess I guess I thought it wasn't. I was more the conservative type, so I guess I didn't really think it was proper for the courses they were taking and all the turmoil they seemed to be creating. But maybe that's.
Did you read the Cardinal?
Oh yes, And the.
I don't know. Did you subscribe to that? Well, we must have had to subscribe to it.
Yeah.
I guess we had one paper for all those fellows in the house.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. One subscription and a lot of readers.
One of the other items here, maybe they talk about graduation. Having finished school in the middle of the year, I guess I didn't, and fortunate having a job, I didn't get back for graduation. I guess I always kind of, maybe I missed something, but Art, did you come back for graduation?
Yeah, it was. I came back in June. I was fortunate enough to be working then too, but I did take the day off to get in with the graduation ceremonies, and I can remember there was a very hot day, and I nearly passed away or melted away because I had my cap and gown on, and that was a little bit heavy for that particular day. I'd have been better off to be in shorts or something, but in those days, right?
Who was the commencement speaker, do you remember?
Oh boy, no, I don't. I was trying to remember whether it was Len Frank the president when we graduated?
Yes.
Yeah.
What did you think of him?
I thought he did a good job. I really thought he was a good administrator and did a good good job. I don't know, did you have any feelings about him or
No, I think you expressed pretty much the same that I would mm-hmm. have about him.
Yeah.
Were you aware of the experimental college students?
Yes, the Michael John group, mm-hmm. yeah. But that was really sort of set off from the university, and they were sort of out of the mainstream, and so I didn't really have much to do with them. I was aware of them as being there, but not really too familiar with what they were doing or attempting to do.
Were they considered somewhat on the liberal side too?
Yeah, I think so. Just never had much to do with them, really.
Did you go to church, either of you? Or
yes.
Well, how important was the church and the social life created by the church to you?
See, I guess we went up here to this Congregational Church. I attended the Congregational mm-hmm. Church up here on Breeze Terrace.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I didn't get involved, but many of the students used to go down to what they call the press house in those days, Presbyterian, mm-hmm. down mm-hmm. here on State Street. But I guess I attended Sunday, and that was about the extent of my, mm-hmm. in those days, of my religious activities while I was in school.
But socially, it wasn't important for you?
No, I guess not. Looking back on it, I maybe attended one or two parties over there at the press house. That was quite popular. And there was another place, a Lutheran church on University Avenue, that used to have some student activities.
And you went to those sometimes?
Maybe I dated a girl that was went to attended there, and we would go to some of their activities.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't as regular. Some people just lived over at the press house, I remember. And I thought it was a great place, and it was, I guess. But it was too far away from where I was rooming, and we didn't have a car in those days, so you didn't. You had to take a bus wherever you wanted to go.
Yeah. Well, I guess my experience is somewhat similar. I was raised as a Catholic, and so my my mother and I used to go to service on Sunday, but the church was never part of my social activities. The church had a softball team, and I played on that, and we had quite a bit of success with that, and there was a sort of a clubhouse in the back there that we fellas used to congregate in, but so far as social activities, really the Catholic Church wasn't too much for social activities for young people in those days, I don't believe, and so I never really got involved. I did go to the University Catholic Chapel once in a while. There was a Father Hugel, I think his name was. It was there for many, many years, and he was quite a popular figure and did a good job. But I guess that's the limit of my activities.
One other thing that you asked, did the university do a good job of educating us, put it in different words, I think. As I mentioned before, Art and I had all of our accounting courses together, and when we come to, one of our goals was, if you were going to be in the accounting field, was to get your CPA exam.
Mm-hmm.
And Art and I wrote our CPA exam in November of 1935, having finished in January of 34. And we were both working for the state of Wisconsin in different departments, but traveled around, and our paths crossed. But Art invited me to come and stay at his home in Madison to study for the exam.
So we always said we ate, breathed, and slept accounting. and we were there a better part of a week. The exam took 3 days, from 8 to 5. And we both passed all six parts. I think there were six parts of the exam. So we studied the right thing. We absorbed the right things in school. And I always, as tough as Faye Elwo was, I always kind of give Faye part of the credit for I remember one of the courses you took was CPA problems. When you were really conditioned to, sure, when you studied for the exam, you'd get prior exams, but it was that course in problems that helped us over the problem section. Of course, the whole accounting curriculum was geared towards eventually passing the CPA exam. And I thought they did a good job. I don't know about you, Art.
Yeah, well, I think they did too, and I have always regarded our achievement as being one of the crowning achievements of our lives to have stayed together for a week and then to have passed the exam. It really is pretty unusual to pass it in the first time.
And, oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
There were five in the whole state that passed taking it the first time, and we were two of the five.
It's lucky you said that. It wouldn't mean anything.
But we were very fortunate in that we did study the right things, I guess, and we knew the answers to the questions of that being the exam. So I think we were both better off for it.
And we've been great friends ever since.
Yes, I'm interested that you both had jobs right after college. That apparently wasn't necessarily the case.
Well, that's true. The 1933 graduating class went down en masse to the Chicago Century of Progress and were pushing wheelchairs around because there weren't any jobs. And generally speaking, if there were any jobs, the college kids were starting at about $65 a month. In our case, we were somewhat luckier in that we had taken a state civil service exam, and I got a job as a field auditor for the Emergency Relief Administration, and relief was one of the biggest industries, of course, in 1934. I had a job at $125 a month, and I was a field auditor, which meant I got my expenses paid when I was out on the road, and I had the fantastic meal allowance of $2.25 a day, and two and a half for hotel. Of course, I never was nervy enough to put in the full two and a quarter a day for meals, but if you put in $1.75, well, that covered all your meals, with $125 a month and my meals and lodging paid for, I was really in clover.
Art, I think there was 6 months after we started, there was a 10% waiver on our $125. We got $112.50 net. And some of them even got script that they got paid in. So we were both fortunate.
Yeah. What was your job?
I was with the Department of Taxation in the Municipal Accounting Division, and I was traveling around the state like Art. And I think sometimes my expense account was greater than my salary check. But I was doing quite a bit of traveling, and so we go back to our good training in the university, that we were able to pass the civil service examination, and my connection was this county treasurer's job that I had in the deputy county treasurer during the summer months up there. Mm-hmm. The municipal accounting department did the audit. And so they were looking for somebody with built-in experience. Mm-hmm. And so I finished my wrote my last exam Saturday morning, and Monday I went to work down at Kenosha.
You were both very lucky.
We talked too much.
Do you remember, was the university time in your lives a particularly happy one? Or, I mean, where would you rate it on the scale of 1 to 5 in comparison to the rest of your lives?
Well, what's one? Is one good or?
One's good, yes.
Yeah. Well, I think I enjoyed it, and I think that was one of the happier periods of my life. It was kind of a struggle, but I enjoyed going to class and enjoyed book learning type things, and I was, of course, relatively carefree, I guess, I think I'd rate it pretty close to the top of the list as a very positive period and a very very enjoyable period during my life.
I would agree with Art, and I, especially looking back on it now, the education that we received while we're here enabled us to do so many things in later life that it's got to be one of the great periods of our life to have gained that knowledge, which gave us an opportunity in the future, to live a good life in the future.
Well, now I'm going to shock you. I talked to somebody this morning who was not happy here because he was Jewish, and he said it was very difficult in the 1930s to be a Jewish student at the University of Wisconsin. Were you aware of that at the time?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Jewish kids and the black kids were kind of looked down upon. We used to make some snide remarks about Chicago Spaniards and Eastern Jewish kids who came out here and that sort of thing. I guess I'd have to say that we were probably pretty racist.
Yes, it was really general at the time.
Yeah.
But they came, those Jewish students came from New York because it was a liberal school.
Mm-hmm.
And there was many of them here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't understand this fellow, whether he was from the local area, but there was always a big influx of New York Jewish students here,
mm-hmm.
summertime and summer school, and in the regular session.
Yes, I guess. I wonder if we covered everything.
Yes, we're going to.
I expect you. What do you do now? What's your next activity?
Dinner.
Oh, how nice. A drink and dinner?
The cash bar.
Oh, yes. That's welcome at the end of any day. So.